Okay, 10.5 minutes now is our time after the hour of 6 o'clock. Pleasant evening to you once again on this Father's Day. I'm Greg Stinsili. You're listening to The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. As per usual on Sunday evenings at 6, we give you the Better Health Radio Show. We're 10 minutes into the 6 o'clock hour, and we still have that for you. And we're getting ready to say a very good evening to Dr. Renee Boyce and her guest for this evening's edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Redston. Good evening. How are you this evening?
On this Father's Day, I'm a happy fellow. Good evening to you.
Yes, I want to take this opportunity on the behalf of the Better Health Radio Show to wish all fathers a very wonderful Father's Day. I hope that you were treated special, even more special than you are treated on a regular basis. So welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. If you want to say hi to Greyston over there in the studio, 434-1790, and to send us your WhatsApps, that would be 266-4862. So those numbers once again, 434-1790, that's to call into the studio, and 266-4862 for the WhatsApp. As usual, there is somebody that we want to say a very special good evening to. This is the lady that I met maybe about 2, going into 3 months now. Her name is Daphne Griffith. She said that once she found out about the show, she has been a loyal listener. She's been there every Sunday listening in. So I hope that this Sunday as well, Daphne, that you're right there by the radio listening in and you don't miss your shout out. But have a wonderful day. And of course, to all of our loyal listeners, we want to say hello to you. We can't leave you out. You're there with us every week. And I was trying to think how many seasons this has been. I believe that we are in season 4.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
Yes. Yes, this is season 4. My goodness me, the time has flown.
Imagine that.
But we enjoy being here with you. And we have a very, yes, we have a very exciting show coming up for you later on in this year. It is going to be a completely different show, but it will be exciting nonetheless. But all of that chit chat is over now. Let me introduce you to my guest. He is no stranger to the Better Health Radio Show. He is a well-known pediatrician. Good evening and welcome to Dr. Clyde Cave.
Good evening, Dr. Renee. Good evening, Stetson. Happy Father's Day to you, Stetson.
Thank you kindly.
Yes. Dr. Cave, as I mentioned, he is a pediatrician. He has been a pediatrician. I'm sure he does not want me to tell you how many years he has been a pediatrician. I was in a conference just a little while ago with Dr. Cave, and they were discussing how the neonatal intensive care unit came about, and it really was a very good experience listening to the development of the NICU from somebody who was there from the beginning, and all the humps and grumps and bumps and all the different challenges up to the point now where we have the NICU that exists at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. So Dr. K, we really do want to honor you for the work that you've put into pediatrics over the years. We just want to say thank you for being a stalwart, for staying in there, for sticking in there. I think your role has changed now a little bit.
Where a lot.
I was trying to be diplomatic. I believe that you are now the director of medical services. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yes, he is the director of medical services over at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, which is equivalent to stress on top of stress on top of stress. Any managerial role for our for the lone hospital in the island where you're responsible for patients, you're responsible for staff, you're responsible for the public, it's not an easy task. So we wish you all the best, Dr. Cave. God's strength and good health for the years to come, and wisdom and good judgment.
Thank you so much.
Yes, but let's get into today's topic. We're going to be talking about COVID, but we're going to be focusing on children, of course, because we have Dr. Cave in. And I took the opportunity to look up the statistics. So as of June 20th, there were 3.86 million deaths, a total of 178 million cases, positive cases. And those are digits where we in a small country cannot fathom, really cannot imagine. 3.86 million and 178 million. I mean, granted, if it was money, it would be wonderful, but to think of human beings, that number really is a large, is staggering. Here in Barbados,
Also,
we are a
Renee,
little more.
I think we should always
Go ahead.
remember when we talk about these numbers, this is just the tip of the iceberg. When we say cases, it's the known cases that have been diagnosed. There are probably lots more. Most people are estimating between the magnitude of 4 to 10 times more, in many undeveloped parts of the world or less developed than we are. You don't have access to the testing, so unless you get really sick or die, the cases are underrepresented. So,
Yeah.
yes.
And because there are several persons who are asymptomatic, again, those persons would be, I would say, under the radar, not intentionally so, but there really is no reason for them to go and get tested. You're not feeling unwell unless you would have come into contact with a case, or you're in one of those professions, such as the frontline professions, where you would be tested. But the numbers still are staggering, and to think that we have not got an actual figure, but we're still approximating, it really does cause us to wonder. But here at home, our numbers would be just over 4,000 cases. And we've had 3,986 recoveries. Unfortunately, we've had 47 deaths, and 47 deaths is 47 deaths too many, because it's still a life that has been lost. And we are in mourning with those families as well who would have lost loved ones. And I think the last count was 17 at Harrison's Point, so we are happy to hear that number has been trending downwards. So there have been some good figures, but this is not the opportunity for us to throw caution to the wind and be happy-go-lucky and do whatever we feel like. We still have to maintain that sense of decorum and use the wisdom which we've all been given and do the right thing. In the beginning, when COVID had started, it looked as though children would have been spared. The cases were mainly involving adults, and we thought that it was an illness that was not going to affect children per se. But as life would be, children became affected, infected with COVID, and affected by COVID as well. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, how children have been affected by the disease. And we're going to look at their development during this time and what we as parents, what you as parents can do to see your children safely through this difficult time. So let's talk about, first of all, the physical fallout from COVID-19. What are some of the physical challenges from the virus itself, as well as some of the fallout that would have occurred as a result of children having to stay at home?
Right. There is the disease, which, as you mentioned, children have been relatively spared. It's not that they don't get it, but when they get it, they are usually less severely affected than older people, which is probably why they were undercounted at the beginning until we went looking for them. And even if a child does get COVID, the chances are that they will recover, and as far as we know, recover quite well. That caveat, as far as we know, is because this is still a relatively disease, a year, 2 years that we've been studying it. And it seems that in older people, there can be what is being described as long COVID, which means that symptoms may pop up later. And we just don't know if there will be a similar thing in children. Now, we don't have any suspicion that that is necessarily so, but we have to keep an open mind. So luckily, children are relatively spared from the infection, but we have read about and heard about and actually had, one or two cases locally of a post-COVID and after-COVID consequence called MIS-C, multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, which is sort of like, I guess, people who are familiar with rheumatic fever and can see that the model is not the infection at the time. It's because when the body is infected, it recognizes similarities and actually causes damage to itself. That's the kind of thing that we think MISC-C is in children. So unfortunately, if you are one of those unlucky people who, when the body mounts an immune response to fight off COVID, that immune response also is directed to the person's own body, then they can have complications. Complications in multiple systems, as the name suggests, usually with a high fever, usually after recovery from the infection, although that's a little bit of a puzzle, because most children don't even know they were infected. So sometimes MISC-C is presenting for the first time, and it's usually a high fever, and it can affect the stomach and intestinal tract with vomiting and diarrhea. It can cause effects the brain, seizures, irritability. It can give rashes. But the most important thing is if it affects the heart, those kinds of consequences. So although it's rare, we really have to be on the watch for any child who has a high unexplained fever and is unwell. Luckily, it is uncommon, so it's not something we're expecting or even hoping to see a lot of, but it's something to be vigilant for. Okay. The bigger consequences, though, as you alluded to, would be the other things that have happened to us as a society in dealing with COVID, and children, particularly young children, have been affected in ways that I think we are only now starting to think about and be aware of. And like many things, if we had thought about it, it would be obvious that these things would have an impact on young children. But in the excitement and panic and rush to contain the COVID virus, you know, we did everything that at the time we thought was most sensible. Now we are trying to figure out what is the best way to deal with the virus, but also to deal with people. The elderly who have been shut in and deprived of contact, the people who have to work differently, the people who cannot work because of lockdowns. But as you said, the focus of this program would be children whose lives have been affected in the obvious way of school, but also in the limitation of their social contacts, their emotional support, their variety of experiences, things which were always taken for granted as a normal part of childhood, no longer quite the same.
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things that we are seeing. We always say that hindsight is 20/20. It is when you look back that your vision becomes perfect. Like you said, Dr. Cave, in the middle of a pandemic, many of us have not lived through a pandemic. So in the middle of all the chaos and trying to adjust and readjust and protect and conserve, we didn't know what the fallout would be. Children, human beings, are social beings. Children are formed based on social interactions. I was joking with one of my friends and I was saying that, you know, babies are going to think that it's normal. Part of the facial structure is a mask because everybody is wearing a mask. So you know, you learn your mother's features by seeing her face and so on. You go out in public and you see another face, but you're going out in public and you're seeing 2/3 of a face, or maybe 1/3 if you're wearing your mask properly. And so maybe when we get a few years down the road, you know, children are going to understand, you know, hey, oh, wait a minute, that's not part of the face. But it's just, that was just being a bit silly. But just to show that there are going to be so many changes in the normal development of these children as a result of COVID. Children by nature are touchers and huggers and feelers, and you would send your child to school with a Batman mask and he or she is going to come back home with a Superman mask simply by virtue of children being the way they are. We had Professor Anne St. John on a couple weeks back, and she was talking about the physical fallout as a result of COVID-19, the rates of obesity that have gone up in our children, and we understand the side effects or the long-term consequences, that will occur as a result of having obese children. We end up with obese adults and then the chronic non-communicable diseases. So that's one of the fallouts. Let's talk about the development of the children. How has COVID-19 impacted the development of our children?
So much of it we are now learning about. So much of it is still to be discovered. I think if we start at the beginning with babies, there have been some classic experiments in psychology to see what babies intuitively respond to. And it was always known that if you took a circle and put two dots for eyes and a mouth, like a smiley face, you could get animals and babies to respond and bond much more to an object with that kind of smiley face, as opposed to the same warm, cuddly blanket or form without a face. So there's something in our development that is programmed to recognize that face. And all of a sudden, we're wiping out, as you said, the smile. So, and I can feel it when I do my clinics with newborn babies. You're trying to smile and communicate with your eyes behind a face shield. And there's this kind of blank look on a baby's face, whereas before they were a lot more engaged. It's taking time. You have to use more voice and touch. And during COVID, we've been so sanitizing and minimizing touch that, it's a conscious effort to help a child to develop in what was just a normal, taken for granted kind of way. I frequently find myself with the older toddler saying, stick out your tongue, and I'm sticking out my tongue to show them how, and it's covered by a mask, and you kind of think, well, what are we doing here? And the children, 4 and 5 year old children, just as they're starting to develop abstract thinking, they are a lot more literal. They don't put in the excuses and bypasses that older children and people will take for granted. So if they know they're supposed to wear a mask, they wear it all the time. And if they take off a mask, it really is a stressor to them because they're doing something that they've been told they shouldn't do. And, most adults will give ourselves a break or too many breaks, and excuses. You'll see the 4 and 5 year olds correcting people around as to how to wear the mask correctly or to put it on or these circumstances. And when they're able to read, they'll be pointing out the signs as to what to do and reminding the parents to come and sanitize. And sometimes if you have to ask the child to remove their mask so you can examine their nose or throat, they're asking permission of the parent as to, is this okay? You can almost see a fear and a terror because to them, COVID is something that they hear people die of. That's the impression in the news, the emotional content of what they are. That's why when you asked, for a topic to try and focus this discussion on, and we came up with intelligence, it's not just the individual learning and academics. There's also emotional intelligence and social intelligence, which I think are very important aspects for us to be conscious of as the things we have done and how they have affected children.
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Cave. We talk about different societies and the ways in which persons behave. For example, we say that those persons who come from the more northern Caribbean islands like Jamaica and so on, they tend to be a little more go-getter and a little, they go after what they want, as compared to us in Barbados, where we are, I don't want to say we are a docile society, but we are a little quieter as a people. Do you think that this COVID-19, where socialization has changed, where the interaction between children has changed, where emotional intelligence really has become an important thing, do you think that this is going to change the way the Barbadian society behaves when these children grow up?
Yes, I think it is going to change all our societies. How it interacts with other characteristics of the society remains to be seen. We do know that sensory deprivation has an adverse effect on everyone, but particularly in the early formative years of a child's development. And, you know, if part of that sensory deprivation is not seeing a complete face, if part of it is not being able to explore the environment and put everything into their mouths because their parents panic and want to sanitize as soon as a child touches something, if they become afraid of being too close to people because you have to social distance, and if they take this literally, we were already concerned that the younger generation spent too much time in isolation on electronic devices. Now, who knows how we have added to it by insisting, you know, on remote learning, minimizing interpersonal contact. And there are some things that technology cannot replace. You have to learn how to play and how to share things, which means you have to experience a group. You know, it's not the same as five people on Zoom. The rules are very different. So yes, how this impacts the long-term development of individuals or of societies, it's going to be a very interesting journey, I think.
And you spoke about sharing and groups, and this is another indication as to how society, the changes in society are going to impact us. In previous generations, there were many children in a family. So you would have six, maybe seven children in a family. So by virtue of being in a family, you were a part of a group, a big enough group where you had to learn to share and develop. But no, many families are just one, sometimes two, possibly three children. And that having to share really does not exist as much as it did before. Persons in the older generations would tell you that sometimes they had to fight for their food, and they learned different skills about to being, well, territorial might not be a great thing all the time, but they learned different skills from being involved in a larger family, how to take care of others, how to be kind, how to share, how to express feelings. And these are things now that our children, unfortunately, are not getting the opportunity to do. Early in our series on COVID-19, I believe it would have been early in 2020, we had a discussion with, I believe it was the occupational therapist, Mr. Rochester, and we were talking about the ability to express how you feel. And we had to be very careful with the children because they might not necessarily express by saying that something was wrong. So in your experience, Dr. Cave, especially during the last 2 years or so, year and a half, what are some of the signs that parents can look for to pick up that something is going on with this child that I need to cue into and do something about?
This has become really difficult because typically we'd have said, look for a change in your child's behavior. But that's changed anyway. So now what is a significant change? You know, we would say, look at them not spending as much time with friends. Well, that's what we're doing to them. Look at them being more solitary. Well, that's kind of enforced. Look at them spending too much time on electronic devices. Well, that's what they now have to do even to go to school. So it really is a new skill set for parents to be very in tune with their children. And I always think that being a parent must be an extremely complicated job, because just as soon as you master what a 2 and 3 year old is about, they become 4 and 5, and it's a complete new set of skills. And then you go through childhood and late childhood and then early adolescence and late adolescence, and everything just gets more and more complicated. And there's no book that you can say, here is how it's done because every child is different. So, you know, even siblings within a family have responded to the lockdown and the distance learning in different ways. Most children, when I ask, which do you prefer, online school or real school? It's almost universal that they want in-person school, real school, so they can see their friends. But there are some children who prefer the online learning, and it seems to have worked for them. Now, we are measuring how these children are doing with their academics, but we really don't have a good measure to see if, yeah, they might be learning the stuff, but are they going to be well-rounded individuals? Will they know how to have a conversation? Will they know the give and take that any negotiation for sharing requires? Or are they going to be spoiled individuals who've been brought up in a silo where you press a button and expect a response? You know, there are lots of things we've not had to think about before. What I can say is that the psychiatrists at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital are seeing a lot more young people with signs of stress manifesting as suicidal gestures or nervous breakdowns, for lack of a better word. There are a variety of psychiatric manifestations of this. And I think we are seeing it in younger children where the level of anxiety, their perception of how difficult it is for them to cope with life is higher. And that's really hard now because it may or may not be associated with academic performance. They may be doing fine in the tests such as they are. What's been attributed to moodiness of a teenager may be something more than just moodiness, which is to be expected of teenagers anyway. How a parent determines this, how they communicate with children, their children, or any children that they know, given the stresses that the parents are also under. You know, maybe they're not working. Maybe they are dependent on the tourists coming back to get into the hospitality industry. And that kind of emotional tone of anxiety and stress, that's part of what's communicated within households to children. So the children are not just reacting to what is said. This whole environment of so many unspoken things that's taking, I think, a bigger stress on them. And I think parents need to sometimes reassure children, the younger children, but also teenagers, that this is a rough time, but we are going to get through it. This is not going to be this way forever. Yes, mommy or daddy are having challenges with this, but it is eventually going to be all right. You are going to be all right. You will eventually be able to, be back with your friends. This is just for a short period of time.
Yeah. You spoke just now, Dr. Cave, about the different things that parents have to go through at the different stages. The question always is, how do we strike that balance as parents where we want to develop children who are aware that life will not always be easy, but we also have the responsibility to somewhat try to shield our children, if you see what I mean, where's the middle ground? How much do we let on for these children? Because we want them to understand life. We don't want to raise children who have their heads stuck in the sand. But on the other hand, we have a responsibility to share their burdens, as it were. What do you think about this?